Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, we have an announcement that might make fans of Harry Potter get all tingly. A Chinese city is about to get self-driving buses, and we have a great story on how two NFL players got to spring practice after missing their airplane flights.
Sports Leisure Vacations, our show's main sponsor, celebrated 38 years in the tour business this past Thursday. And at 3:20, I'm going to turn the tables on Mark and ask him a little bit about almost four decades in the travel industry.
Chris Elliott, one of our favorite consumer advocates, is taking a cross-country vacation with his three children this summer. At 3:35, Chris and the family join us to talk about the challenges of four people living out of a car while seeing the country.
The Napa Valley is one of the most popular destinations not only in the United States but around the world. And at 3:50, Gwen Duncan's going to stop by and give us tips for locals on visiting Napa and Sonoma.
It's a very pleasant Sunday afternoon in Sacramento, California's capital city. Welcome to the latest edition of The Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I've got two tickets to Paradise.
North to Alaska. I go north to Russia's own.
Lord, I was born in heaven, man.
I come from a land, land, land.
I bless the rains down in Africa.
Get your kick.
With the show.
Welcome to another edition of the Travel Guys here every Sunday 3 to 4, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Remember, you can follow along with the stuff we talk about on the Travel Guys at TravelGuysRadio.com. I'm Tom Romano, and to my left, Mark Hoffman. Good afternoon, Mark.
Hey, Thomas. It's nice to see you again here. Beautiful weekend here in Sacramento. Kind of little rain during the week, you know. I can live with this. Temperatures in the 70s and the 80s in the summertime would be just fine with me.
Well, you know, the good news is I started the garden. Can you believe it? Tom's a gardener this time. And the nice thing about it was is Mother Nature did a little bit of the watering for me. So that was a good thing.
I thought you were about to tell me that you had planned to do all the planning on Thursday morning or something.
No. We're good. We got green tomatoes, and believe it or not, I've actually harvested my very first zucchini squash. So those of you backyard gardeners out there, if you thought started your garden too soon, well, not true.
Yeah, dinner at Tom's house tonight. I'll post his address there. Travel guy.
Got a great show on tap for this afternoon. There's a couple of things that are coming up later on in the show that we teased at the very beginning that, you know, I've edited a lot of our interviews over the years, and I have to say that these two were probably a couple of my favorites, particularly, you know, if you're a family person and you travel with kids and so forth. Coming up with Chris Elliott on the backside of the hour is going to be very entertaining.
Oh, I think so. They went from Florida to Arizona. Now they're on the way to Alaska. And then ultimately back to Florida sometime in the fall, or back to wherever it is that they end up. It's Chris, who's a single parent, and he's got his three kids with him. They're 15, 12, and 10. And so imagine traveling with three kids that age in a car, and everything that you're traveling with is all in that car with you. So it's pretty interesting. I think you will really enjoy our conversation with Chris. And then Gwen Duncan's going to stop by, and we're going to talk a little bit about Napa and Sonoma. So we do have, and it's not just Napa and Sonoma to sell you something. It's Napa and Sonoma if you're going from Sacramento, when to go and how to game the Napa Valley a little bit, because it has become literally one of the hottest vacation spots on the planet at this point.
Well, at the beginning of every Travel Guys radio program, we do our best to bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news over the last week. So with that being said, let's bring on Mark and find out what he's got in today's travel news. Mark, what you got?
All right. Well, I think we got some interesting stuff here, Tom. As I mentioned in the headlines, this is about NFL players who missed flights to their practice sessions. So now they're far from the airport and they've got to get there. So this is Green Bay Packers cornerback Davin House missed his connecting flight at Minneapolis St. Paul International Airport late Monday night, and he needed to be in Green Bay, Wisconsin by 7:30 a.m. Tuesday for a practice session. So he reached out to his Twitter followers for a ride.
Mm-hmm.
His prayers were quickly answered when brothers and lifelong Packer fans Chad and Mike Johnson offered to get him back to his car at Green Bay's Austin Straubel International Airport. One of the brothers said, "I went to bed, was scrolling through my Twitter, and saw he needed a ride. My brother lives in the nearby town of Hudson. I'm in Eau Claire. I tweeted him that I could come and pick you up." And so they picked him up. It took about 4 hours to get there, and they got a free tour of the locker room. The Green Bay Packers locker room, and the player offered to buy him a hotel room, but all he would take was $80 in gas money. On the other hand, Buffalo Bills cornerback Sharice White was forced to take an 8-hour Uber ride from Chicago's O'Hare to the team's practice facility in Orchard Park, New York, Sunday night in order to be back in time for a voluntary practice. You suppose he might have thought of Twitter. He would have gotten out a lot cheaper. The 8-hour ride cost him $932.
Oh, my. Well, you know, I think this is a perfect example. You know, a lot of people don't really understand the significant value, you know, of social media. I think this is a perfect example of as to how it can be used to in a real
positive way. What a great idea. And those two guys now have a story that they will, you know, remember for the rest of their lives. Certainly bragging rights for a while. All right, here's another thing from the headlines in the at the top of the show. Harry Potter Christmas is coming to Universal Studios. Just as the Universal Orlando Resort is doing in Florida, Universal Studios Hollywood is going to celebrate the holiday season this year with the introduction of Christmas in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. The festivities will transform the Hogwarts castle into a winter wonderland using a light projection show, as well as turning the Hogsmeade Village into a Christmas oasis featuring decor themed to each of the individual storefronts and holiday-themed food and beverages. So if you're a Harry Potter fan, I think you might be on your way to Universal Studios this Christmas. Mm-hmm. It's just a guess. Self-driving buses are on their way in China. In Juzhou, which is in the Hunan province in China, they are starting ART buses, which stands for Autonomous Rail Rapid Transit. These buses actually follow sensors that are in the paint on the roadway.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah. And here's the deal, Tom. Costs between $50 and $100 million to build a kilometer of subway. Costs about $2.2 million to fix up the road for one of these self-driving buses with the sensors. So I would say that the chances of you seeing that in these United States in the next few years is probably pretty darn good. We've talked about a laptop ban, Tom. Mm-hmm. You know, that for the flights coming in from Europe and Middle East and Africa.
Yes.
Every week it seems like we have a different update on that. Now they are talking about the possibility of banning laptops on inbound flights from 71 different countries. So this has something to do with the battery. And I've been trying to look into this and figure it out, but there's a piece of information that we're not being given about this whole thing, I believe. And I think it has more to do with the batteries, because if you put the battery in the cargo hold and it catches on fire, it's going to be a much bigger problem than if it's up in the cabin. So some of the things that we're hearing as to why the reasons these are being done is a little bit goofy to me. All right, here is something for folks who like Broadway shows.
Okay.
It was announced this week by the entertainer herself on Twitter that Cher, a musical based on her life, will be headed to Broadway in 2018. Apparently, they did a walkthrough of it recently. That's what they do when they're putting shows together. They will gather a kind of a make-believe audience and invite a bunch of folks to be the audience as they walk through and do some of the music and stuff. Mm-hmm. And apparently, Cher is very excited about it. Also was announced this morning that a musical, Margaritaville, is coming to. It's going to be in Chicago this fall, and it will be on Broadway, unless it's a total flop, next spring. So Jimmy Buffett and Cher are headed for Broadway.
Well,
this make all the baby boomers and listening to the program really happy. Of course, she tweeted out about the show, and then she followed up with a tweet that said, "Who knows? maybe I'll be on. Maybe I'll pop up on stage myself or something. Wouldn't that be wild?
That would be great.
You went to see a show about Cher, and she ended up on the stage singing one of her own songs. They're going to have apparently three actresses that are going to play her in through different parts of her life. The original, you know, coming up with Sonny and the whole variety
right.
show on TV, and then the middle part of her career, and then finally mm-hmm. her farewell tour, which lasted longer than many people's lives last. But anyways, it'll be fun. Lots of people.
Fascinating.
You know, the thing with Cher is you either like her or you don't.
There you go.
And so the Jersey Boys did it, and Carole
sure.
King, and so it seems as though Cher would be a Cher and Jimmy Buffett seem like logical follow-ups to that.
The Jimmy Buffett thing, I'm not quite sure. Go ahead.
It's supposed to be a musical comedy.
Okay.
So sometimes these things work, and sometimes they really bomb. So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on it. I might go to Chicago and see the pre-Broadway run in November and come back and report on it. Uber, you know, has been having some issues. Their CEO got into a fight with one of his drivers, a verbal exchange with one of his drivers a couple months ago. And there have been a lot of things coming out of Uber headquarters about sexual harassment and things of that sort. Uber cleaned house last week, fired more than 20 people after a company-wide investigation into harassment claims, and hired at least two high-profile senior executives whose jobs it will be to set strategy and rethink branding. So Uber, after wandering around for a while in the darkness, it sounds like is finally going to get their act together and get back on the main stage. Tom, let's close here with a couple of items from overseas. As you may remember, a couple weeks ago, British Airways had a system failure, an electronics failure, which affected about 75,000 passengers, had to cancel over 600 flights, and it left them with about £150 million compensation bill, which if you are a traveler in the United States, you might say, what does that mean? Well, it means that in Europe, there are rules that if an airline doesn't fly and it's their fault, you get compensated for it, more than just your ticket back like you do in the United States. And of course, there are companies that help people get that compensation, and they charge a little bit of a fee and stuff. Anyways, British Airways has £150 million compensation claims that they need to be able to pay out over that. If you are planning on heading overseas and you are flying British Airways between the 16th and the 20th of June, it looks like that they are going to have a four-day walkout over a pay dispute by the cabin staff. Now, oftentimes this doesn't impact the mainline flights too much, but it tends to impact the express flights because they bring flight attendants from those flights to run the mainline flights, and then they've got nobody to run the express flights. So if you're flying on British Airways or any of its affiliated carriers before about the 22nd or 23rd of June, why, you might want to be very careful, and you might want to have a plan B in your back pocket. That will help make you a smarter traveler. And that's your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys. And as we mentioned earlier, Sports Leisure Vacations, Mark's company, has just celebrated 38 years in business. And I think it might be fun for me to, well, I wouldn't call it grill, but to ask Mark some great questions. Let's dig into the maybe personal background of Sports Leisure Vacations and its owner and find out what makes them tick. That's next here on the Travel Guys. Welcome back. We are the Travel Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We're brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, and it's 38 years ago this past Thursday. Mark Hoffman and his team got together and celebrated an anniversary. And Mark, we talked last week about some of your very first trips with Sports Leisure Vacations and taking people originally to ball games and then trips to Nevada, to Tahoe and Reno for those gamblers and so forth. And boy, your company has grown by leaps and bounds. Let's start off by talking about what your family, what their response was, and some of your friends for that matter, because I remember in the early days, because I knew you back then, and you had family and friends that were part of the company. Uh-huh. You know, what was their response when you decided that, you know, you were going to make this a business?
Nobody really saw it coming. So I wasn't in the travel business. I didn't, you know, it wasn't my goal to be a world traveler. I didn't travel at all when I was growing up because we didn't have a tremendous amount of money. So, you know, the family goal was always to get to Disneyland ultimately. And I was probably about 30 years old the first time I made it to Disneyland. So there wasn't anything really in my background that would have led to this. I think friends, family, and stuff were just kind of surprised that, you know, and Mark's always kind of marched to the beat of a little different drummer and done his own thing. So I just went off and did it. And the other thing was, we came from outside the travel industry, really, and the travel agents in town didn't much care for us when we came into business because we were selling directly to the public. And of course, travel agents prefer that they're the ones that sell to the public on a commission basis. They don't want somebody stepping in and eliminating them out of the chain. So it was understandable why they weren't real receptive to a local tour operator. But we just kept plugging on anyway. We had a funny name, and I had no idea my clients were going to turn out to be mature travelers. And here we are 38 years later, and you know, we go all over the place. We do lots of different things. But more so, we talk about ourselves as a travel family. And I don't know if 8,000 people can be a family, but I think conceptually that we've kind of captured that a little bit.
Now, over the years, you know, I'm sure that a lot of things have changed with Sports Leisure Vacations. First, you were Sports Leisure Travel, and now you're Sports Leisure Vacations. So the name made a minor change, and you made adjustments along the way. But the overall philosophy, first of all, and we're going to talk about what things have changed a little bit later on. But right now, tell me about, from the time the conception and early days of Sports Leisure Vacations to now, what things have remained the same? What philosophy has remained the same with your company?
We've always been a customer-driven company. We started out as sports travel, then sports leisure travel, and then in the late 90s, Sports Leisure Vacations, as travel agents were kind of going out of business. And we've been confused as a travel agent for a long time. So I'm glad that we stayed with the slightly funny name that doesn't necessarily, I mean, we're not that much into sports. We do some figure skating and some baseball, but people by the name would think we are all a sports company. What hasn't changed? What has stayed the same? I think, Tom, the concept that really, the reason Sports Leisure Vacations has had any level of success in the business world is because none of us came from the travel industry when we started. And of course, you know, none of the people who were here when I started 38 years ago still work for me. But I do have a number of people who have been here over 20 years. It's all about listening to your customers and doing the right thing. We have always been an incredibly service-oriented company. When people have a refund due, we try to get it back to them right away. When they need something from us, we try to be as responsive as we can. We try to, if anything, overserve people. I'd rather somebody say, you know, that's too much service than not enough. And I also think that there are not very many companies in the world today that are still based on service. I mean, it's all about fast, and it's all about, you know, getting it as quickly as possible and as simply as possible. But there are a few people who still enjoy good service. And I think that probably that's a long-winded answer, but I think that's probably the key to our success is that We still listen to our customers, which we have for a long time, and we try to do what they tell us that they want, as opposed to just going off and doing whatever we feel that they might buy.
Well, you know, that brings me to the next question perfectly, I believe, and that is your audience continues to change. Your mature travelers of 20 years ago are not the same mature travelers that you have today. So with that being said, what changes have you made?
Well, we've noticed in a lot of changes in just the last couple of years as more of the boomer crowd kind of falls into our demographic and starts traveling with us. The people, when I started in business 38 years ago, a lot of women didn't have driver's licenses. We were still living in a time when women weren't acting really independently. That was just all starting to happen in the 70s. And so now women make many more decisions on their own. There are a lot more single female mature travelers than there were when I started. Because women are much more empowered and they feel more comfortable and confident about traveling by themselves or traveling, you know, alone with another female friend. So if that's something that's changed, I also think that over all the time that we've been in business, when we started, people to travel a couple hundred miles in a vehicle was a long distance and would probably take you most of the day. Now roads, well, I'd say roads are better, but that probably is open for discussion. But people, destinations like Hearst Castle and Fort Bragg and Mendocino and places like that don't sell as well as they used to because many people now have had more mobility all through their lives. Does that make sense?
It does, absolutely.
People, they've been able to travel around more. And so there are lots of places that by the time people get to be 60 years old, they've been there and they've done that. So, and plus, experiential travel is huge today. People want to go places. They want to touch things. They want to meet people. They want to taste things. They want to immerse themselves on some level in the destination. So that's what has changed, definitely. We say around here now, be careful about putting fluff into a tour itinerary just to kill an hour or something because the customers are pretty smart and they recognize fluff. And they know it, and they're liable to call you on it and say, gee, couldn't we have just stayed at the hotel for another hour? Or maybe if I'd had that free hour and I'd have known about it, I could have gone and done something that I really wanted to do on my own. So people want a lot more choices now than they did back when we started in business. They wanted to be kind of led around. Now they definitely do not. They want more options and more opportunities, and they want things to be more experiential, and they really want to meet people when they go to destinations and not just see something or be told about something, but they want to meet the local people.
You know, people that put in 60 to 80 hours and sometimes more, like you and your staff do, to provide services for your travelers, have to get some benefit out of it. There's got to be more than just a job. For you and for the people that work with Sports Leisure Vacations, what is it about what you do that that drives you and gives you satisfaction on a daily basis?
Well, thanks for that question. Let me just take a second here and say the people who work for me work really hard to provide. We're talking about travel here. We're talking about people's dreams. So you can't screw that up. I mean, you've got to do your best every day. And I have an amazing team of people who really work hard and are really dedicated to the mission of the company. And dare I say, probably most people in business don't have that. So I'm extremely lucky to have a staff that is so hardworking and dedicated, and I think they very much enjoy what they do. Many of the people who work for me go travel with us. Some of them are people who used to travel with us before they came to work here. We talk about having a big travel family of 8,000 sports leisure travelers, but right here in our office, we have our own little family of a dozen and a half people who make all of this happen every day. And they are incredibly dedicated people. And I think we all understand that we are very lucky to go through life's journey having this sort of an occupation. And that is not lost on us, I guarantee you.
Thanks, Mark, for sharing the inside look at Sports Leisure Vacations. And once again, congratulations and happy birthday on 38 great years and many, many more in the future.
Thank you, Thomas. When we come back after the news, we're going to talk to Chris Elliott, who is traveling the country with his children. I can't imagine. We've already taped this interview, so I can tell you it's a great interview. Hang on. And then Gwen Duncan's going to tell us how to go to the Napa Valley, beat those ridiculous hotel rates and those high wine tasting fees and all that stuff. Coming up after the news on The Travel Guys.
Chewing on a piece of grass, walking down the road.
Hello there. You've reached the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for tuning in. Time to hook up with one of our favorite guests, consumer advocate Chris Elliott, and this time not necessarily, you know, from the normal locations, which in the past has been with his kids at the grocery store, at his home, traveling off to who knows where. But this time, well, Chris, tell us where you are, what you up to.
I am pulled over at the road in Truckee, California, not so far from where you guys are.
There we go.
You got the three kids in tow. You started out from Florida, right?
Yes, we did. About 7 weeks ago, we started in Florida, and we made our way all the way out here, and we are headed up to Alaska.
I've been kind of following you along the way, so I know that you made a stop at Grandma and Grandpa's house in Arizona. You spent some time there, and so now your ultimate destination is Alaska, is that right?
It is, yes. Fairbanks sometime in September. Doing this, it's a little bit of an educational trip for the kids. And for me, it's field research because I deal with a lot of travel cases. So I like seeing how other people travel and experiencing the ups and downs for myself.
Chris, yeah. Let me ask you, what was the process of deciding what kind of a trip you were going to take?
Well, for this trip, this was a long time in the making. I knew that I wanted to take the kids on a cross-country trip, and I had places that I needed to be as well. So that kind of set the itinerary. But truthfully, we've been doing this for a while. We started in 2010, taking the kids traveling. And the reason why was that I had a mentor over at my employer, National Geographic Traveler, who insisted that I travel. He said, you have to do this. Your children will learn more outside the classroom by traveling than they will in the classroom. And I believed him. And then we started doing it. And as a result, we've actually probably spent an average of 300 days out of the year on the road. Just traveling around and experiencing these places and learning from them.
So, Chris, I know the answer to this question, but folks who are listening probably would immediately sit there and say, well, he's got three kids, they're school age. If he's traveling 300 days a year, how do they go to school?
Yes, we have enrolled the kids in a virtual school called International Connections Academy, and that they have classrooms and teachers, and they attend classes, but just they use Skype instead of actually, they have their own app that they use, but it's something like Skype where it's called Live Lesson. And that's how they learn. And then they have all of their coursework is online, too, so they don't have to haul a lot of books with them.
Wow. That sounds like a pretty neat way to go to school, see the country and go to school at the same time.
Well, it does. It sounds good in principle, but in practice, you actually have to make sure that the kids are self-motivated, because a lot of there are no classes to attend in the traditional sense where you wake up, get dressed, go to school. So they have to be very motivated. And sometimes it's a little bit difficult, especially when you're in a really beautiful place. When you're like in Hawaii and you get up in the morning and you want to go to the beach, it's really difficult to say, before you do that, you have to do your lessons for the day.
The kids are there with you right now as we're talking, right?
They are listening to what I'm saying, and they're chiming in. You may have heard my oldest son, Aaron, saying, "It's live lesson. We use live lesson, not Skype." Yeah, they're all here.
So anything you say, they can only hear one half of the conversation. Anything you say can and will cost you, I'm sure.
Oh yes.
Somewhere.
I can already
somewhere
see the eyes rolling, and now one of them is going, "Stop! It's not true."
Let's tell the folks who are listening that your kids are 15, 12, and 10. And so, what is if you can share with us in their presence, what has been the greatest challenge so far of this extended? You guys do lots of road trips. So, what's the biggest challenge of this, or just road trips in general?
The biggest challenge. Well, I think you hit on that with the school. We are now in the last 3 days of school, and we still have some coursework left to do, and we've gotten behind in some of the coursework. So that's a challenge, actually, because explaining if you're the learning coach, which is who I am technically. I'm not the teacher; I'm the learning coach. So I have to constantly explain to them the value of an education. And that, the education happens in the classroom and outside the classroom, not just outside the classroom. So that is an ongoing conversation that I have almost every day with them to just encourage them to do their academics. But the other thing,
they have a wonderful combination of the two, indoors and outdoors, if you can make it all work.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. And, so far so good. But the other thing is the routine. There is no routine when you're on the road. Every day is different. One day you might wake up and go hiking, and the next day it might be, raining all day, and you might have to stay inside and do your coursework or catch up on reading. It just really, really depends. And not having a routine is a little bit difficult. So I guess the thing you have to get used to is the fact that there is no routine, and that is your routine, that there is no routine.
Chris, how do you decide where you're going to stay? And how do you interact with the locals when you're traveling on your trips?
Well, we stay with friends and family. You mentioned my parents that we've been staying with. We also have some sponsors. HomeAway, which does vacation rentals, is a sponsor of ours. So we get to stay in some of their vacation rentals sometimes. Sometimes we get an invitation from a place, and we'll be able to stay there. And so we kind of patch that together. And I also work with a travel agent, so she helps a lot with making all these arrangements for us.
So, Chris, anything that might make our listeners a smarter travelers if they were thinking of doing something like that?
You know, I love that question because I just finished a story for USA Today about people who travel all the time. You know, summer vacation season is coming right up, and people are probably asking themselves, you know, they're saying, I don't have enough vacation time. I wish I could be on vacation more, or I wish my life could be a vacation. And I actually went out and interviewed people who went on vacation and never came back. And some of them have kids, and a lot of them are just either single or just couples, and they have been out on the road. The longest person that I talked to who had been out on the road was 10 years. She had just left and never came back. If you want to do that as a lifestyle, that is possible. But my advice would be make sure that you first have your finances secure, so you have a job or something like that that allows you to work from anywhere, because if you need to be somewhere, then this is not going to work. We had talked about routines as well. Routines are really important. Just make sure that you're not moving around too much and that you have some level of sanity. You know, a lot of people talk about downsizing to the point where they only have one bag to pack and everything else is sold or gone. And that's not realistic. I mean, I'm sitting here in a rental car at the side of the road, and the back is full of stuff. And we spent a lot of time trying to get everything down to just those couple of bags and a box or two. So you have to really be careful about what you pack and how you downsize and that kind of thing. So those would be my three main tips.
Yeah. So what we should do now, Tom, I think, is we should find out from the kids what it's like to travel with Dad.
Perfect. I was thinking the same thing.
Okay.
Well, they're in the car with you.
Who do you want to talk to?
Well, you pose the question to them and tell them what we're up to here. And I'll talk to anybody who has something to say.
All right. Why don't I put you on speakerphone and then I'll just let them chime in, whoever wants to.
Okay.
What's your question?
Okay, the question is, we asked Dad, you know, what the challenges are of traveling with the family. Now let's ask the family, what are the challenges of traveling with Dad? You know, what wisdom can you share with the folks who might be listening to the program that might make them a little smarter the next time they head out on the road with their parents?
I think that the best thing that you can do when you're like a kid on the road and you're traveling with any sort of parent is that you just want to behave well. Don't freak out. Just that sort of common wisdom. Just don't do anything too crazy, because when you're on the road, it can be very high tension. And people, you know, you don't want someone to be driving in the car. Meanwhile, everyone's fighting and then there's traffic. You just don't want that. So the best thing to do in the travel is just to cooperate. Don't scream too loud, that sort of stuff.
Oh, I love that. Okay, that was from my oldest son, Aaron. He's 15. And
I wish they
would do that more often.
That's probably pretty good wisdom, considering you guys are traveling in some pretty close quarters. All right, do we have anything from Aiden or Aris there that they want to check in with?
Oh, Aiden is shrugging his...
I don't know!
Suddenly, you know, they do nothing but talk when we're on the road, and now suddenly they've gone silent. We should do this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's okay. We'll have to do this on a daily basis. Aris, let me ask you, how do you tolerate two older brothers on the road in close quarters like that all the time?
How do you tolerate two older brothers, he asked.
Smack them.
She says, smack them. Okay, now we know why they fight all the time.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's outnumbered 2-1. So there you go. All right. Well, I wish you guys great travels, and we would love to check in with you a month or so down the road and make sure everyone's still alive. You haven't left any children or Dad by the side of the road or something like that. And for those folks who are just kind of following along, we've been talking with Chris Elliott. Chris's column appears in the Sacramento Bee every Sunday to talk about how he advocates for travelers. Chris, you have a website, Elliott.org. I really highly recommend it for if anybody has any sort of an issue with a travel company or, heck, any type of company. You can go there and enlist Chris's volunteers. Chris, anything about the website that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, yeah, if you want to follow our family ventures, you can go to awayishome.com. And we also have a Facebook page It's facebook.com/awayshome and on Twitter, which is twitter.com/awayshome.
All right. We will put, for those that are listening, we will put those things up on travelguysradio.com. So if you would like to follow the Elliots as they make their way to Alaska and back, hopefully there will still be three children when you come back home. but thanks for pulling over on the side of the road on your way to Yosemite and talking a little bit with the travel guys today. You guys have a wonderful journey. Be safe. And Eris, you don't kill your two brothers along the way. And we'll talk to you all again in a month or so.
Okay, say goodbye, kids.
All right, goodbye.
Okay, coming up next here on The Travel Guys, Gwen Duncan, travel agent, joins Mark and I as we make you a smarter traveler about traveling to the Napa Valley. Hello, everyone. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. We are The Travel Guys, proudly brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And it's time to bring on one of our favorite regulars, Gwen Duncan. She's kind of the travel girl now with Cordially Yours Travel. Gwen, Mark, here we are again. What's up, guys?
This is our world traveler. I'm the domestic traveler. Gwen is the world traveler. But today we're going to talk about something that's kind of close to home here, and that is tourism in the Napa Valley. And before you get started, Gwen, with making our folks a little smarter Napa Valley travelers, we just have to tell folks that when you talk to people who sell travel in California, literally that Napa Valley is the hottest product. It might be the hottest product in the country right now in terms of a destination, which certainly, Gwen, is not making it any easier or cheaper to go to Napa and try some of that wine or spend the night, is it?
No. No, in fact, I was really surprised at what the increase has been just over the last year.
Well, we
wine
were talking.
Wine tasting usually costs about $23 for, that's an average, $23. Then you're limited to maybe three wines. Now it's $27.50. It took a 19.5% increase just over the last year. And that's kind of a lot. And then there, well, it limits the amount of wineries you want to go to.
Tom, isn't it interesting that, you know, we have the stock market and all of these, you know, gauges of markets that go up and down and stuff like that. And someone has created now a market gauge for the cost of wine tasting in the Napa Valley. That's how Gwen knows that it's 19% more on the average this year to taste wine. Gwen, I was looking at your list here, and some of these places are $30. I mean, you could,
yes.
Heck, you could be broke before you got drunk, it seems like.
That's right. Silver Oak is $40, but some of them they charge more, but they'll offer you to taste maybe four wines instead of three.
Now, wait a minute, you guys. I mean, when you go wine tasting, it's supposed to be small sips now, and some people don't even swallow. They get this. The question,
and that's what you get still, Tom, is just small sips.
That's right. They have the special measurer thing for your wine. The question I have is, or should I say a comment, you know, it's got to be more than just about the wine, because there's a lot of great places to taste wine in the Amador area and here in Northern California. But Napa has its own charm and its own beauty. Doesn't that play a major part in why people want to go? And plus the, I don't know if you want to call it the mystique or the click of going to
Napa. No, you've hit on it, Tom. Yeah. You've absolutely hit on it. Don't you agree, Gwen? Don't you think that Napa?
I absolutely do, because especially during the summer and during their high season, they bring in entertainment, a named entertainment, and you set out in picnic areas, and it's all along Highway 29. You can see these wineries from the road. It isn't like you have to go searching like you do up here in El Dorado County. You know, go miles and miles and go behind a bunch of trees and finally find a winery. It's there. And they entice you with stuff like that. Prager Winery does port. They have chocolate truffles and savory, what they call sweet and savory walnuts and stuff. Anything to get you in there to what they call cleanse your palate.
Well, and there are a lot of things to do in the Napa Valley besides the wineries. Listen, for shopping, there is for ladies who like to shop, and you've got a few dollars in your wallet. Then Napa is definitely a great place. We talk all the time about Jack London State Park and the outdoor concerts and events and things that they do down there.
And you can't forget the food. restaurants. They've got Michelin star restaurants out there.
Well, and you have the Culinary Institute and all of those places. Gwen, if folks are thinking about going to Napa, you've got visitors coming from out of town, and you're thinking, well, gee, you know, why don't we just make it a long weekend? Let's go Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Sunday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, or something like that. What wisdom would you have to folks who are considering a weekend visit to the Napa Valley?
Well, it's real easy. I tell them, avoid the weekends. Avoid the weekends. I know that it's popular, and maybe they have some of their events during that time, but if you're wanting to do some serious wine tasting, if you go on the weekends, you've got an issue with standing in lines, long lines, and it's going to take you a lot more time. And it's congested with traffic, terribly congested with traffic. And if you decide to stay there a couple of days, the prices for hotels double. They could be as much as 150% more. But I would highly recommend going Sunday through Thursday. I know that's probably not optimal for if you're a working person. But do something like that, or you're just going to spend a lot of wasted time in lines.
Well, and you could find that a lot of you'll save, not only save yourself a lot of money, but let me just make a suggestion here to narrow it down a little bit better. Sunday nights are hotel's worst night. So whether you're a business hotel, which there probably aren't too many of those in the Napa Valley, or you're a tourism hotel, Sunday night is the night that is hardest for you to fill up. So if you live in Sacramento, I might suggest to you that you depart Sacramento on Sunday afternoon.
Yes.
And go down to Napa and check into your hotel and have a nice dinner on Sunday evening when the weekend crowd now is pretty much gone, and stay there maybe like a Monday, Tuesday. Not only will you save a lot of money, but you, as Gwen has just mentioned, you will have a lot fewer people to contend with. Does that sound like a plan, Tom?
It does. And then I have one other that I can chime in here. If you're looking at, you know, you got family, you're living in Northern California, Sacramento, let's say, and you've got family coming to town. And I did this a few years ago when had a bunch of future in-laws that came here for a wedding all the way from Houston, Texas. We got ourselves a limo, and they got they got big limos, big limo buses, and number one, you don't have to navigate the traffic. And number two, you don't have to worry about drinking and driving. It's a great day trip. You get away relatively early in the morning. You can see the beautiful scenery of the Napa area while you're riding, and make your way to the wineries. Find a nice place to get yourself a dinner, and then, you know, get home later that evening. So you don't even need to stay over. There is an extra cost factor involved, but if there's a dozen of you and you divide that up, it's cost effective.
No, I think that's an extremely smart idea. But keep in mind a couple of things. High season for the wine country is mid-August to about mid-October. And it's a popular time, and it's called harvest and crush time. And the prices are always the highest. And so whenever you are going to go, even if you go in a limo, as Tom highly recommended, and I think it's excellent, plan your trip. They can find easy ways for you to get to these wineries, and they can drop you off instead of you having to park and walk forever. But keep in mind that also October happens to be high conference season. Hotel rooms are going to be high. So it's one way to do your planning ahead of time, and you won't be so frustrated when you get there.
Don't go during peak season, and don't go on the weekend. And there's a possibility that your trip to Napa might not bankrupt you. But
that's
only a possibility because really is becoming, when you look at hotel prices and stuff for Napa, you're going to lean towards Tom's idea because you're going to say, holy cow, how can a hotel in Napa be that much? And the other thing about Napa hotels is that you're not going to find a lot of lower range hotels. There's no Motel 6 or, you know, the Days Inn and the Red Roof Inns and some of those places that folks like to use to, you know, steal a night in a reasonably inexpensive room. Just doesn't exist in Napa. An inexpensive room in Napa is something that doesn't start with a two.
And I would imagine that Airbnb has places, but I would also imagine that they will be pricier as well.
I was just
say
that, Tom. Before Gwen got on the phone, I pulled up Airbnb, and there are gazillion listings in Napa. I'm guessing no one lives in Napa anymore. They just rent out their home and live somewhere else because they can make more money. Gwen Duncan, thank you so much. for all of the making folks a smarter traveler to go down to Napa, which is something that folks from Sacramento do quite often. All right, Gwen Duncan from Cordially Yours Travel. You can find a link to Gwen at travelguysradio.com. And if you need a full-service travel agent, you can give Gwen's folks a call, and they can fix you up. Thank you, Gwen. Talk to you soon.
Thank you guys so much. Bye-bye.